Welcome back to the Weekly Manga Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about all of your favorite ongoing Japanese manga. This week we'll be talking about Chainsaw Man Chapter 182, where we have the return of some familiar faces at the end. Also, we will be discussing Speedrunner Cannot Return from the Game World, in which he uses quite literally every speedrunning strat in Chapter 16. And we'll finish off by checking back in with Ichi the Witch, our opinions on the first 10 chapters, in our first discussion since Chapter 1. All that manga news and more coming right up. Hello again, my name is Bruce. I am the proprietor of the White Gray Black YouTube channel. This week I am joined again by my constant co-host, Gautam.
Hello, hello.
A special shout out and thanks to our Patreon subscribers, Yaji Black. If you want to have your name read at the top of the episode and see some bonus content, check out patreon.com/WGBmanga. It's only $3 to start. Let's get into this Chainsaw Man chapter, Gautam. This has been a wild ride. The last couple of chapters, I will say, but this one particularly I liked for the emotional stuff and a little bit of Asa backstory, which I think we already knew about, but
we knew about, but I think I forgot it. Because I didn't remember how her parents died, you know. Maybe that was like first chapter stuff, but it's been a while. Good little refresher.
Yeah, I think it's flashbacks early on. First chapter might be right, but
yeah, it's a sweet backstory, and this is like, it's kind of funny that Yoru kissed him twice, and Asa still hasn't kissed him. If you think about it,
yeah. Technically, she kisses him at the end of the previous chapter, and then kisses him again, and then this is, I think it was earlier in the year, maybe not the last time we talked about Chainsaw Man, but maybe the time before when they were like riding on the train and kind of planning on what to do, and Denji was talking about how he's like, maybe I need to go to a brothel first. Like that kind of like, he was having that conversation. If you remember that earlier in the year.
Or Katana Man offered owns a brothel and he's like, yeah, come down.
It's like, I guess before I save, you know, my darling adoptive daughter, I should go do that. Like, cause maybe that is right. I like that thread is coming to an end and there's character development here with Denji or at the, could be regression, but it is development of some kind. I don't think it is. I think this is him kind of, I mean, not accepting, but like what he says down here, right? It's like, my life alternates between sexy and terrible.
I know,
it's driving me crazy.
It's such a great line. My life alternates between sexy and terrible. That's so funny.
Yeah, it's like when somebody sexes me up, suddenly sex is all I can think about. I can't reflect on my mistakes for crap like that. Where it's like, It's cool that he's like openly admitting what he was doing, you know, when we talked about on the train with Katana Man, where it's like, he has a drive for sex and that like pushes him to make mistakes. And he puts that as a priority over other things, whenever someone engages with him in that way. And that he's coming to this realization now of like, has not led him in the right places so far, right? Like,
I also think he uses sex as a distraction to like, think about how miserable his life is. So him engaging in going to like a brothel and getting a handy and all that stuff, I think he's just like not trying to think about how everything in his life has gone wrong.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like the world is literally like burning down around him, because of Chainsaw Man. His, like I said, his adopted daughter is captured, potentially dead. They're trying to use him to prevent or start some apocalypse. Like, yeah, his life sucks a lot. And so I get like, hey, distract yourself with sex for a little bit. But
Naita's more like a sister though, right?
Yeah. Like older brother, little sister, I guess is probably a better relationship, but
I think so. I think Denji is too immature to
I agree with that, sure. I like that he's finally sort of, he's been dealing with this for the past, you know, 6 months in chapters or longer even. I mean, this stuff happened to him in part one even with who's the eye patch girl that like threw up in his mouth.
there was that.
I mean, there was even Makima, there's
everyone. Yeah, and every single one of them.
Yeah,
and even Power and Bomb Devil, right? It's like,
oh yeah, Bomb Devil for sure was a sexy distracting from terrible, and then became terrible. Yeah,
And Power and Denji only became friends because Denji saved her cat because she said
she could touch her boobs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, I really like this chapter for dealing with that. And I don't think this is putting an end to it, but we at least have Denji. I mean, it kind of is, though, because Denji, I think, basically for the first time in the story, or at least one of the first times, is like rejecting a sexual advance and saying no. Yeah. And saying it's not good that these things drive me as much as they do. And he's sort of like rejecting Yoro here for doing that.
Yeah. You know what? This actually felt like growth. And
yeah,
him crying it out. Good for you, man.
Yeah.
It's about time.
The chapter continues. I mean, Chainsaw Man in general is I think pretty very funny. Denji talks about how it's like, my life is awful. It's terrible. Like, how do I get over it? And then Yoro's basically like, I got over it. You can get over it too. Just like, which is very funny. And then,
so was that, and in the next page, she punches herself in the face, right?
Yeah. And then we swap to Asa, I believe is basically what happens.
Yeah.
Because they both have control of her body, but it swaps. We see this happen a lot where it's like one of them has control and the other one has to wrestle it away or whatever. So.
Yeah, because it's absolutely, this is like the perfect Asa switch, because Yoru is absolutely saying the wrong thing. He doesn't need encouragement. He needs someone who can empathize.
Which, you know, in the last 6 months with all this weird sexual stuff, that's, I'm pretty sure, always been Yoru who has been sort of making those mistakes and trying to drive Denji like that. Because I think Asa is, I don't necessarily want to, I don't know exactly how she would act. I don't think she would be quite so forward and quite so manipulative of using like kissing Denji to try to get him to do stuff, right? Like
I don't know how much of this is manipulation on Asa's part, or sorry, Yori's part.
Yeah.
I think she actually just has a crush. Because like,
I think it's a little bit of both, but
her intent was to cut his dick off, not give him a hand job. And that happened. Right.
yeah.
So I think it's just a crush, like more so than calculated manipulation of Denji's sexual desires.
Yeah.
Even though that is a good strat, it just accidentally worked out that way.
Yeah. It's, I guess it's less that like, it's not like a mustache twirling, conniving, like I'm going to kiss Denji and he's going to do whatever I want him to. It's more just like, if I kiss him, it'll cheer him up and then he'll do what I say because he'll be happy. And if I keep him happy, that'll be good. Like it's more of,
I think she was just horny, man.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know, because we've kind of seen an obsession with, particularly with the Chainsaw Devil or Chainsaw Man from
other
powerful devils. So, Makoma the Control Devil had a very kind of similar, like, I'm obsessed with Chainsaw Man and I want to control him by doing weird stuff, like some sexual, some other things, some silly things.
I read that as fanaticism for sure, like you did. This seems more like a crush to me. This is like everything with Yoru, because Yoru is a dumbass.
That's true. Yeah.
Just like Denji and Chainsaw Man. Maybe a little less dumb, because Denji is so dumb. But she is very dumb. This reads to me more like she just has a crush on Chainsaw Man.
Yeah, true. Oh, and I think there's also an angle of, because Yoru is the war devil, right? And part of this, I think, is that the war devil does not understand human emotions and relations, because they're like, or at least none of them that apply outside of war, like stuff like love and crushes, like doesn't get that. But I think what we're seeing here is exactly what you said, which is that either something about her sharing a body with Asa or Asa's, you know, brain interacting and sharing. I mean, we see with
Denji and Pochita.
With,
right?
Denji and Pochita, like, that there's some sharing and some learning. Pochita learns some things, and Denji kind of is shown some things. And so I think it's the same thing here. And I think that Yoru is basically like learning these new human emotion things, which are completely new to her. I think that's maybe the exciting thing. I think what you're saying. So
I think the teenage hormones are corrupting her brain.
I would not even doubt that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think it's the same way Pochita and the old Chainsaw Man prior to Denji was like this unstoppable killing machine. And then Pochita aligned with Denji's dreams and all that after they formed a contract with each other.
Yeah.
I think it's just they, just like Pochita and Denji, Asa and Yoru is getting more humanized.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was cool seeing her use the War Devil guns, by the way. The Statue of Liberty finger guns.
Oh, that was so sick. A couple chapters ago. Yeah, that was great. So here we get the sort of reminder of Asa's backstory, where she tripped and her mom gets eaten by a devil because of her. And then shit gets weird. And this is the exciting part about the chapter, is that all that is great character moments is absolutely what I expect from Fujimoto. He's doing good shit here. I like that a lot.
I like it too.
And Asa here is like, you taught me that I still have something to live for, something I look forward to so much that I'm willing to eat a crap burger. Denji then throws up this weird stuffed animal thing, which I is 99% this is the snow devil, which he'd eaten. And then
when did he eat the snow devil?
So I don't think we saw it, but we're told about it. There's a couple of chapters ago
where he was like devil hunting. He was like eating ears and all that.
Right. And I think it's from it was what's her name who was making a deal with the Japanese government. They like got a phone call and were like, it's confirmed, like snow mouth, like, or it was like, it was like mouth snow. It like listed a couple of devils that were gone. And people theorized, I think correctly, as we'll see, that Chainsaw Man essentially was eating things that Denji had bad memories of. I almost want to go back and try to find that panel and see, because let me find that. Cause that's, let me see if maybe just images will show it to me. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. This is octopus mouth, snow, and bitterness erased. And all of these have basically bad memories for Denji, right? Mouth, he got his mouth thrown up into, he got his tongue bitten out by another girl he liked. Snow is he fought Aki in the snow. He just has bad memories of it. Bitterness, I'm trying to remember bitterness. There was something in part one.
I could just see that being everything, you know?
Well, or this could just be like bitter taste. Like he just doesn't like bitter taste. I remember him eating something, I think in part one, someone in one of them mentioned here.
Was there an octopus at any point?
Octopus, I think, is he just doesn't like, what's his name? The guy with the octopus power, whose name I'm forgetting.
I don't fully recall.
You know what I'm talking about, though, right? Like,
Aki 2, Electric Boogaloo. The guy, his boring babysitter.
Aki. Yeah, yeah. So all of those, I think he just like has bad memories or experiences of. And so this is him here in this chapter throwing up the snow devil. Because again, we get, you know, this, we're in, what are we, aging devil's world, right?
So did he eat that guy's patron or something? For the octopus? I wonder.
I'm not sure.
Have you seen the old Quiznos sub commercials with those?
The weird things. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, go back one panel. It looks just like that.
Yeah, hold on. I know what you're talking about. I have to pull it up.
Anyone who's a millennial will...
Spong monkeys, apparently, is what they're called.
Oh.
This shit.
Yeah, it's identical. Oh, my God.
It's very, very close. That's very funny. Yeah. I didn't even think of that, but now that you say that, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's funny.
But yeah, so snow starts coming down, and then we swap over to the scene of a boat, and it's
Aki and Power.
The first time we have seen Aki and Power in part 2. I don't think we've even flashbacked. Maybe flashbacked once to see them, but
I think this is right after Asa said that her reason to live, she has a reason to live, and that she'll eat unlimited amounts of crap in order to see her dreams fulfilled.
Yeah.
Or see her reason to live fulfilled. And then coincidentally we flash over to Aki and Power. Denji's old reasons to live.
Which he lost, which is definitely been affecting him in part 2.
So I'm glad we're seeing them again. And hopefully we can reconcile with some of that drama. Maybe get Power back. Who knows?
Do you think we're going to, is this a flashback of some past scene that was not shown in part 1, but took place in part 1 that's going to be important, or
no?
Where do you think this is going? Because we get the sort of darkening of the outer edge flashback, like to the boat to here. And there's snow also happening here, so maybe there's more bad memories of snow. I'm not sure what we're going. I'm like, next chapter, I don't know what we're gonna see. So
the aging devil, before sending them to the aging world, wherever this is, it said that Chainsaw and War are not mature enough to talk to them, and that they need to grow up. and put them in this world. And now we're seeing this kind of flash to what's important to Denji after reconciling with some of the trauma he had. Yeah. I think he's good. It's not real, but it's like him confronting traumatic memories he's been avoiding.
Yeah.
With his sexual desires or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still think, when we started talking about this, when it started at the very beginning, I, after just a couple chapters, I kind of had the assumption like, oh yeah, something will happen and eventually he will go into hell to rescue the Blood Devil and resurrect power, at least in some way. Do you think we're headed to that? Or do you think we will ever see power again?
100%.
You do? Okay.
I hope so.
I'm not sure. Fujimoto surprises me, and because I'm expecting it, as soon as I go, okay, I'm expecting to see power again and have her resurrected soon, I immediately think, well, if I expect it, it's not going to happen, because Fujimoto just doesn't do that usually.
I know Fujimoto subverts a lot, but I will tell you why I think power is coming back is at some point. Maybe it's not immediately, but yeah. At some point. Is Fujimoto does bring back fan favorites, as we saw with Quangxi.
True.
And power is prime setup for a comeback because of how she exited. How she mentioned that she'd be in hell and she won't be herself, but Denji just has to go back and befriend her. Right?
It's hard to check off the gun. I will be in hell, come save me, and not have that happen. Like,
yeah,
she could have just been like, I will be so sad, Denji. I won't remember me if you ever see me again. Like, even that is a lot. So
it is like a Chekhov's gun that, and Fujimoto fires the Chekhov's guns. He gets back to them. And two, I think his like subversions, you're right, he's impossible to predict, but his subversions are satisfying. And I think it would be pretty unsatisfying to leave that plot thread in the air without any kind of action on it. You know what I mean? Maybe she doesn't come back, but they cross paths. That much I know.
Yeah. I do wonder. So, I mean, another theory that was happening fairly recently in the last couple of months here was we saw the return of a bunch of the devils that Makima had enslaved, controlled at the end of part one, but we did not see Reis, the bomb devil, return. And we know that she was one that Makima used at the end of part one to fight Denji, but we have not seen her return. So I do wonder, because in this chapter...
We haven't seen Angel either.
Yeah, true.
Those are the two important ones I think we haven't seen.
Well, and Angel, I think, isn't super important to Denji. Angel was like more important to Aki, so... but I do wonder, because we have Denji starting to confront his trauma and his issues, like kind of starting with this chapter. I'm wondering if we are going to essentially maybe now start seeing him go back and confront, you know, killing Aki and, you know, maybe rescuing power, and maybe Reis comes back and he gets to deal with that.
I think that's what this is.
And then getting back Nayuta and confronting the Makima stuff. So I do wonder if this is sort of like the first step of the marathon of recovery for Denji, and that's where we're going to start to get these characters coming back that we thought we might get before then. It's like he was like the aging devil, essentially, right? Like he wasn't ready to have encountered these people and deal with that. But now I think now maybe he is, or at least he's starting.
Yeah.
To be, so
I think that's the point of it too. Yeah. It's like because essentially in part two, we see Denji at his lowest point. He's like picking up cigarette butts and letting people use him as a stool and is eating raw cake batter, cake ingredients. Like he is at his lowest point and he lost everything he loved, but we haven't seen him like confront his trauma or grow more than he did in part one, just kind of suffer. I think this is the turning point in Denji's character arc where we see him deal with his baggage.
Yeah. Well, in part one, I don't want to say he didn't grow in part one, but Denji at the end of part one, instead of sort of like overcoming personal trauma to be better, like with himself and feel better about himself, it was more him being strong enough to overcome an external threat, which I think is a little bit different. So,
well, you know, part one, the thing he was missing is he was like an orphan with no one to rely on, and he found a family. Yeah. He had a found family.
Yeah.
And the trauma of losing that found family is what he's dealing with in part two. It's like, the ending of part one is the trauma inducing factor that he has to kind of reconcile in part two.
Yeah, because he I think you're right, because in part one, it is definitely about him having nothing and being a nobody and being incredibly stupid and being accepted and loved by Aki and Power and being in that little kind of family group. And then also, yeah, but then the end of it is essentially he doesn't necessarily revert, but then he deals with loss again. And is, yeah, you're right. Part two is the massive fallout from that and Chainsaw yeah. Man and everything. So
the Denji depression arc, yep. if you will. But cool. Either way, this is a good chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that the aging devil is talking about maturity and leading to character growth after telling Denji, hey, drink my blood. It's all child blood. It's all funded on children.
Yeah. Well, we know that the aging devil is like a primal devil, right? I think is what they're called.
I think it's got to be.
So yeah, I'm wondering how connected the primal devils are to like quote unquote hell. Because I'm wondering if we could get Power like real soon. If the primal devils have like obviously like tons of power, tons of like extra, you know, fear, like darkness, aging, a bunch of stuff that like basically everybody's afraid of. I wonder if they have some kind of connection where aging devil maybe could like pluck, you know, bring Power back or bring Power into the fold now or something. I don't know. I'm curious.
I imagine they can because they're here in the material plane. But at the same time, I think they won't, because I don't think the devil actually cares if it's not in the contract.
Yeah, true.
If they can't get something out of it. But this is speculation. The primal devils are, I think, intentionally written to be these like enigmatic, like even like normal devils are already kind of supernatural things we can't predict. But I think the primal are supposed to feel like a Lovecraftian, otherworldly creatures.
Yeah, the sort of laws that are laid down for some of the other devils of like Chainsaw Man, if you eat a devil, it gets erased. The primal devils seem to be not necessarily outside of that, but they're much softer on we have rules. The primal devils are sort of like we're so powerful we don't have rules. So
yeah, exactly. It's and what normal metrics of success for humanity is like the darkness devil. Nobody could follow the logic behind what the darkness devil was doing or wanted, because mm-hmm. intentionally, I think it was supposed to be like so out there it defies human logic.
Yeah, exactly.
Or motive, you know, stuff like that.
For sure. Cool. Anything else on Chainsaw Man? Anything else you want to discuss that we didn't hit on?
No, I'm still enjoying it a lot. And it's nice seeing Power again. I miss her.
Yeah.
She's my favorite.
Yeah, I like Power and Aki both a lot. And Aki's death in part one is one of
tragic
and one of the most beautiful like visual metaphor chapters maybe I've ever read.
Oh, I know, dude. That snowball,
the snowball fight is it's insanely sad. So cool. Yep, I'm looking forward to it. I love Chainsaw Man. It's been a great ride on part two so far. Cool. Let's talk about what is the English title of this? Speedrunner Cannot Return to the Game World. This is chapter 16. This is by mangaka Koide Yoshito.
Have you read any of this, Bruce?
Yes, I read. We talked about it a while ago. I read the first maybe like five chapters. And you brought it a couple of months ago. So I get it enough to have been able to read the chapter and been like, cool, I get it. Like,
I think you can read any chapter and get it because it's the same thing. Like, despite any chapter you read,
yeah,
this is not high art by any means. It's a isekai where a speedrunner goes into an isekai world. Of a game he speedruns.
Mm-hmm.
And the first chapter starts out by him just like speedrunning the final boss. But essentially he has to do all of the other bosses, like a 100% completion run, because there's more going on. And he beat the first boss who is like invincible to all attacks, physical or magical, by throwing money at him, because it's technically not an attack. within the game's logic, so he scams his way out. In this one, it's like the second boss is this slime that just can eat everything and grow stronger.
And like replicate things even itself. We'll see that.
Yeah. And here's what I like about this manga that I think makes it more fun for me than the other isekai. The first two bosses were likable. Like the first villain was a likable, like interesting, had a personality, was kind of funny. This villain's even more kind of likable in that she is funny, has a cheeky personality, is definitely just evil, like very evil. She kills people very easily, but they're fleshed out in a way to where they are not the most hateable villain in a series. And if you watch anime or read a lot of manga, you're like, okay, this character is going to be redeemed by the end of the fight and join the hero side. You see a character who's a bit too likable on the villain side, and you're like, okay, they're going to redeem their ways and swap over. Absolutely does not happen here. She fucking dies.
Yeah, it's great. Let's let's hear the chapter, because I like some of the earlier stuff. There's a lot in this chapter. This basically uses almost every speedrunning like major technique you could ever say. Like, first they do like a, I don't even know, like they're like, hey, we need to, there's like a, we're going to this place where like somebody, some girl is captured and stuff, and they come across the lava ogre level 65, and basically explains like, we're going to grab the shield, we're going to face away, and then if we get a good launch from the lava ogre's hammer, we fly into the deepest part instantly through the hole from the caldera at the top of the lake.
If anyone has played Breath of the Wild, this is Breath of the Wild launching technique that they use.
Basically. He's like, he like basically says you like unequip it with great timing. I think this guy literally took this from Breath of the Wild, because this is like, I'm trying to remember the, I think like jumping and unequipping the shield allows you to like jump through certain walls. I remember when I was watching Breath of the Wild speedruns, you could get into the, like four shrines on the opening plateau by doing this thing where you would like equip a shield and do something and then shield jump, and you could shield jump through walls. And it's like almost exactly this, like, so it's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, the, the big lava ogre hits them. They unequip the shield in time. They go flying. They basically do like a, I don't remember what it's called exactly, but like the way in front of them doesn't load, so their momentum stops and they drop straight into the,
an invisible wall,
which is great, because it's like, this is, there's a lot of series where you're like, oh, like, you know, camping series, you're like, oh yeah, the manga knows about camping because they're writing about it, they're in on it. Like, this guy knows about speedrunning. Like, maybe he's not a speedrunner, but like, he knows about, like, this is the way these things work. Yeah. And yeah, the author of this. So
One piece of context is the slime stole the main character's powerful stick, which is like a bugged weapon for speedrunning, and ran to their lair, which is like 3 weeks of travel away. And they got there in 12 minutes via speedrunning by going on via the underground, which is basically where the map doesn't load. It's like underneath all of like the loaded maps.
Yeah.
And they kind of glitched their way over in like 12 minutes. That's the context, and it'll make sense for the ending.
So this is our, this is the slime, the bad villain guy you're talking about, the second boss, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and they have the stick, which they say like, I can swing the thing like a normal stick, but it's way stronger. And I like the main character keeps like getting behind them and hitting them with money. Like, this is like his only attack. It's like, I can slip behind it. It's like, no matter how strong your chi weapon is, it'd still be zero damage if it doesn't hit. And then the slime does something cool here, which is like, oh, their ability is like they can replicate stuff because they, so they replicate themselves with the bugged weapon, and that ultimately leads to their downfall. I also like that the main character is like, oh, this is dangerous. Like, this is a dangerous thing. It could be bad because what they're about to do actually is kind of dangerous for most games to do. He's like when they, when the slime thing gets cut in half, they like duplicate again, like a Hydra's head sort of situation. He basically tells his companions like, hey, keep cutting him in half. And then at the cusp of defeat, the exact moment, the bad guy freezes. And his body sinks into the ground. And it's like, what's going on? It's like, this is the worst situation. The main character mentioned lag. And you get a flashback of him explaining like if we, like every time the damage on the stick goes up by two, the numbers expand. And if there's a bunch of copies and there's more copies and there's too much internal memory and it lags. And collision detection wouldn't be able to keep up. You'll fall through the ground straight into the underworld. And I thought at first that it was just going to be like, oh yeah, they like clip into the wall and they get stuck there. But it's like, no, It goes all the way. It's like, this is also like the coldest fucking line in this chapter, maybe in the whole series, which is like, use glitches at your own risk. And then the bad guy literally falls into the nothingness. Like, you ever play Minecraft? It's like, yeah, if you mine through the bottom of the map, you just fall and then you die.
It's a very funny panel. She looks like a little child holding that stick falling through the earth.
Yeah. And then you get this, which is like, you see all of the, it's also so funny because you can see above them, like the other map floors, like loaded in only the bottom walls and stuff. It's very funny. Like,
yeah, I love it. It's like it's a perfect use of your premise, your gag, to make a boss just fall through the earth infinitely. Yeah. So very much not a redeemed character. She dies brutally. Yeah. Great.
Or maybe just falls forever. I mean, is that more or less brutal than dying instantly?
It's worse, right?
Yeah, probably. But this is an insanely creative series. And it's monthly, so it's a big, long chapter, which I enjoyed.
By all means, it is a trashy isekai like the rest, but I think unlike a lot of isekai, its gag works phenomenally, and the author knows a lot about speedrunning, so it works even better.
Well, and it's like I don't even know how to say it. Like, most isekai will try to do like, oh, we do one thing kind of, our one little thing is, you know, X. Like, but I don't know. So many isekai don't actually have anything super different about them. They're just like, the setting is slightly different, or the main character's power is very slightly different, but it's the same world, it's the same everything. This one feels totally different to me because there is not like a single angle that the MC is not trying to use speedrunning tactics to manipulate and abuse and like change. And it's like every single this chapter alone had like what they had, like the shield jumping unequipped, they had the world lagging out, dropping their momentum, dropping down. He does something where he like pauses right when he lands that like negates their damage.
It's all speedrunner.
It's like so many speedrunning tactics, like in one chapter. Like, it's it's a long chapter, but he uses like six different tactics of speedrunning to do everything in this.
Yeah, he's the first chapter starts with him like ignoring the holy sword and just like running. He's still level one.
Yeah, it's very funny. This is a great chapter one.
Yeah, it's all great, and I like that the author found a creative way to get rid of the overpowered stick as a weapon. In use of this boss fight, it's just like it's a good way to write out like a thing in the story that removes stakes, you know. You know how in Harry Potter 3, like, there is time travel.
Yeah,
and then Dumbledore is like, okay, I don't know how to reconcile this
in book five, all of them are destroyed.
Yeah. I just destroy them. Yep. It's like, okay,
yep, that's true.
That's a lazy way of doing it. I think this is like a cool way of getting rid of like a stake removing overpowered thing.
Yeah, and it lets him keep using his perfect dodge roll money attack, which is funny and doing, so.
Yeah, so good series. You guys should go check it out if you like isekai at all, and you want like a fun read.
Or if you like video games or you've ever watched speedrunning. Like, I think if you're even a little bit into speedrunning, or you watch what's the speedrunning YouTube guy that does all the great stuff?
I don't know.
Speedrun documentary guy? Hold on. What is his speedrun documentary YouTube? What? It has like a... Okay, I don't know. I can't find it. The name of the channel has nothing to do with speedrunning or games. So I can't remember it, but... it's great. Just, you can find it. There's a bunch of them. He does a new one, like, maybe once a month or once every couple months, but it's great.
Oh, yeah. Summoning Salt.
Summoning Salt. Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. I was like, it has nothing to do with speedrunning. Yeah, Summoning Salt. There you go.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a great, like, rabbit hole to
go
down.
Yeah, for sure. Even if you have only watched Summoning Salt videos, this is a manga you would probably enjoy, so.
Yeah, cool. I think so.
Let's talk about Itchy the Witch. Let's do a little bit of... kind of catch up here. We talked about the first chapter.
Sure.
Haven't talked about it much since then. Gautam, how are you enjoying Itchy the Witch so far? 10 chapters in, a little over a volume. How do you feel?
It's all right. It's not really what I thought it would be. In that, I don't think we have hit any like narrative like through line yet.
It is primarily a comedy so far, I would say, which is also, yeah, not really what I was expecting. There's not been much drama in the series. I would say it is primarily a sort of shonen comedy.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't say that's a bad thing, but it's not really my thing yet. It feels like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, that's where, a good comparison, yeah.
Yeah, like a Cardcaptor Sakura or like a, I don't know, like a Pokemon, where they go fight a different monster week to week, and there's hijinks and funniness and goofiness and silliness. That's what Ichi has been so far, and I think if I was in the demographic to, like, I think if I was younger, I would love this. But right now, I was hoping it would have more of a narrative through line.
I wonder, and I had a question for you, because you read Osamu Nishi's other thing, which is Welcome to the Demon School, Aruma-kun. Did Aruma start the same way? Was it just kind of like comedy serial for chapters, and then it got more serious? Or was it more serious from the start?
No, it was just like this. But okay. Then they started like actual arcs.
Okay, that's kind of what I'm assuming here. This feels very interesting. Yeah. This feels very much like play it safe, get people to read it, make it fun, and then once you're sort of like past the axe, like once you've done, you know, 25 chapters, 30 chapters, and like, okay, then maybe you'll get into something. I do wonder if we see maybe a more serious narrative pretty soon. I kind of hope we do, from my personal opinion, but I'm not sure.
And for what it's worth, Aruma didn't capture me instantly either. In retrospect, on reread, I find the hijinks very fun, but I was getting a little bored initially upon reading Aruma and kind of the week-to-week kind of stuff until it started getting into arcs. But
do you remember how many chapters in that was for
like
Aruma?
30, okay. I think.
That would be my guess, right? Is it basically you write long enough to be like, you are not canceled, and once you're not canceled, you've got about a year to make sure your sales, you know, keep going up or whatever, so... Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for the Saturday morning cartoon hijinks it provides, it is very fun because I do like the characters.
Yeah. I think the characters are really strong in Ichi the Witch so far. I really like the three main people we've got. And I think that the main demon that we killed early on. And then I think that the shark magic here, I think, is also like a fun character.
Yeah. I wonder if those magics that he captured are going to come back like personality wise.
Yeah.
Like the shark and the fox.
I wonder too, because his base magic, whichever, I don't remember what it's called.
The evil guy.
Yeah. That one's a fun character to kind of have on the side, like talking to him as like a little familiar. I don't know if I want 10 familiars following Ichi around all the time, but there's also maybe that would be fun if it's handled well. So I don't know.
Yeah. I'd prefer it was just him too. But yeah, anyway, we can get into the chapter.
Yeah. So starts with this.
You want to do a catch up afterwards?
Yeah. Let's get through it. Starts with this flashback of Ichi talking about how he met a gigantic man who cut himself out of a large fish. Which I like the art down here. I think there's the surprised art. Anytime a character is surprised, it's always cute.
This guy's the Capra demon from Dark Souls 1.
Yes, he very
That's
much.
That's who he met. Yeah,
his Japanese Capra demon who basically teaches Ichi how to make sushi. He comes from a small island country to the east, Japan. He basically
is this
like,
set in the world.
No, but I saw a bunch of people with comments that were like, oh, a small island country to the east and teaches him how to make sushi. It's like that's a Japanese guy.
Totally right.
Yeah, but basically this Minakata guy kind of like spends a little bit of time with Ichi in this flashback and teaches him how to like how to fish, how to cut up fish, how to cook, mainly about cooking things. So Ichi is going to like the challenge that the Hisame magic, which Hisame is just the Japanese word for shark. The shark magic wants him to do is like make me look beautiful. And so the way he is going to do that is he went inside, cut her open from the inside, and then is like making her into a boat of sushi. Like Ichi style deluxe Hisama sashimi boat. I thought this is like, as much as we're talking about like Saturday morning cartoon fun, like this is exactly that. And I like this. I think this is fun.
Yeah. This was fun.
And goofy.
I like how it is. It's like Saturday morning hijinks mixed with absolute gore.
Yeah, it is. It's it's like a little light on gore, but then also there is like blood dripping down the boat on the side.
And he's like covered in
he's
blood,
covered.
Right?
In, well, yeah. Well, he was inside her stomach also. So like maybe it's stomach juices.
I don't know. It's either way, it's like it's very gruesome. But the shark is like so into it because the shark,
so it's like my whole body. It's like literally the best ever. It's like I'm so beautiful.
Like the shark's like quest to tame her magic spirit or whatever it was to make like dress her up in an amazing piece of art.
Yeah, and yeah. There you go.
She hated everything that the girls tried to do, and she loved being turned into sashimi because she's some. I don't know, some weirdo.
Yeah. Well, Itchy's a weirdo too, so it makes sense.
Yeah, Itchy's a huge weirdo. Yeah.
And I think this is kind of the classic presented with a solution, your main character is the only one who can think outside of the box enough to solve the problem. So it's classic, but it works because it's like, Itchy absolutely would think that a boat of raw shark sashimi would be more beautiful than like a hat or a dress or whatever. So
right.
Yeah, like that makes sense to me that like, oh, the wilderness survival guy thinks that well-displayed, well-cooked food is gorgeous as opposed to what you're wearing. Like that, I don't know, it tracks me. I think it's good. I think it's good writing.
Yeah, yeah. I like when you lean into your premise, right? The same thing we said for the speedrunning thing. I like how everything Itchy, even though he is a witch and has access to magic, it all revolves around hunting.
Yeah, so far. And I think it's been very consistent and good so far. So he gets the Hisume magic stone and I like his response. Like, I can't eat this. Like,
yeah,
you can quit acting even dumber than you are now. Could you please put real clothes back on? The girls I think are really funny too. They talked about how like, this is a thing that only Itchy could do. Descarus mentioned like, oh, there are definitely things that only Itchy can do. And she's like what? It's like, mostly really dumb things probably. But the villagers come in and thank them and it's all very sweet.
It's a happy little ending.
Yeah, happy little ending. Anyway, Itchy the Witch finished his first mission and acquired the shark magic. So we'll see where it goes next week. But yeah, I think this is, I agree with you. This is it. I don't love the series so far. I do like it. I think it's easy to read. I don't have any trouble reading it week to week. And I think I'll keep up with it until it overstays its welcome and maybe does too many of these, but I have a feeling maybe pretty soon we'll get a more serious, I would like to see a little bit more serious, even just of a conflict, like instead of everyone's frozen, I overcame the weird kinky shark magic. Now everyone's unfrozen and it's fine. Like do something a little bit more severe. We'll see.
You know, as a generous read and also because I like Irma a lot, and I know the author is like capable of writing really good stuff, I think it is starting off as like a slice of life a little bit in that first it's establishing the magical world. I like that chapter with all the witches. That was very cool. Like where he goes to the academy.
Yep.
And I think this first exam with the shark is to show that these witch trials are not always fighting. You know, it's only sometimes fighting.
Yeah, there's a creativity in overcoming them, and it isn't just you fight them with magic or whatever, so.
Yeah, and I think we'll see more slice of life stuff as the main crew gets established. Mm-hmm. Like, we have these three, and I think they'll have, like, more character-specific or more focused arcs to flesh them out. And then we'll get into the main onus of whatever drama happens.
Yeah, there'll be some other, I don't think we've been introduced to any like major bad guy or anything like that, but I assume that there will be, you know, there'll be another witch at the school who wants to take him down, or there'll be some other great evil or something that'll come along. I'm kind of expecting something like that decently soon.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think Descarus is probably the best character so far.
Everyone loves Descarus. Yeah, she's great. She's a If this ever gets an anime, that will be the character that people will latch onto. So,
yeah, because she's great. She's like this 20 something person. I love that scene in the carriage where the little demon guy was like, "Yeah, don't interrupt their conversation. Yeah, like someone as old as you shouldn't interrupt two children talking." And she desperately wants to be included.
Yeah, she's very funny. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Anything else about Itchy the Witch here?
Yeah, I think it's just pretty good so far.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's not fully my thing yet, but neither was Irma, so I'll keep reading. And
yeah,
I'm sure eventually.
I guess I'll tack on here. I don't think it doesn't really have any major flaws. Like, I don't think this is like, oh, an immensely flawed series. It's just sort of like, you know, it has not shown me the kind of deep character writing that I generally latch onto on series. And because of that, I'm not super into it, but I'm into it enough. So
yeah. And I think we'll get there because Irma
I think
got
we will
there.
Too. I think we will too. Yeah. I definitely think
I'd
this
like
is setting
to know
up.
More
of, yeah.
I think ultimately I'd like to know more about Itchy. Because I think the one thing that's different from Irma is that I think it's very easy to understand as an audience member that the demon world cares only about like ambition and all that stuff. And Irma is the opposite. He's just a nice boy who wants everyone to be happy. And that's like easy to align with as a personality archetype. But Itchy is very hunting centric in a world full of magic. And while that tells me about his proficiencies, I'm not really fully sure what his personality is as a character. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that.
Yeah, I agree. Not necessarily about personality, but I think about conflict. If I had to guess what the conflict is going to be, I think we've maybe already seen a little bit of it, right? Which is Descaros and these other witches are very sort of old-fashioned, this is the way things are. They're conservative in the way that, you know, that we've always done it like this. All the girls are witches. We have a school. There's a process behind everything. And Itchy is very much like, I'm going to do things my way. I don't care about your processes. I don't care how things used to be done. I don't understand any of it. I'm just going to do things my way. To me, that is a, and I think that that's a sort of valuable and important character trait that of Itchy in that it kind of plays it off like, oh, he's so dumb. He doesn't know how the world works. He does things in his own way. But I do think that there's some value in, like we saw even just in this chapter, that his creativity and his different way of thinking has value as opposed to doing things the way the witches would always do things, right? Which we saw the chapter before this where Descaros and the other witch tried to make the Hisame magic look nice and they failed. And so that conflict I would like to see more of. I think that, to me, what I've seen is kind of the core of Descaros is saying, do things this way. We have a way of doing it. You know, we've always done it like this. Do it like this. And Itchy is like, nope, not going to do that. And Itchy succeeds because of it. So I feel like the story has told us already that there's this more old-fashioned style which do things like this. And Itchy's new style of, nah, I'm going to do it my own way. And Itchy's succeeded like that. And so I think there might be some people who don't like that Itchy isn't following their rules, and maybe he has to change her mind or something, right? That would be my prediction for where it goes.
I guess what I'm not fully bought in on yet is his driving force, is what I'm trying to say. It's like,
I agree with you on that, yeah.
But I think that can be developed. We're only like 10 chapters in, so.
Yeah, and it's possible that he's just given one later. Like, I don't necessarily mind like a character not, character doesn't need a driving force of like, I hope it doesn't end up being something like, I need to find my mom or dad who abandoned me, or I need to know, was I born special? Like that. I hope this is not something like that.
Yeah. At the moment he's just going with the flow, which is fine, but it also makes him more of an enigma to me, you know,
For sure.
It's harder to relate to a character when you don't know their full intentions of why they do things.
Well, and I wouldn't even necessarily mind, like Descaros being the driving sort of plot force of like, oh, she needs, you know, she has something she needs to go and do and she has a driving force and Itchy is there to help and maybe change her mind and change and get her character development around that. Like, I think even that would be a good angle for the series to take, but we'll have to see.
Yeah. Either way, I do think this has like the legs.
I think thought, so too. Yeah.
I actually loved everything where they were at Magic Academy. Yeah, like the witch technology where he like breaks the ceiling and because he sensed like hostile intent, but it turns out he was just on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the witch designs were freaking great.
Yeah, the art in this is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked how different they all looked. Like different as in they all had their own unique styles depending on their proficiencies and magics. It's all very cool.
Yeah, art's great. I think we get volume one of this in about a month. I want to say maybe first week of December is when volume one of this drops. So we'll have to see how the sales do. I think this is going to be pretty popular. I see a lot of buzz about this online already. So, but we'll have to see.
I have to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, author Vern McKeown, I think, is a pretty big name. And an artist from Act Age is also one that, at least in the West, those are big names that people like, so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I I guess these three are our main characters, right? Like, Ichi, the male girl, and Desperus. So,
yeah. For now, yeah. I wouldn't doubt that there's more later, but these, for sure, I think are going to be core for now.
Yeah.
Cool.
Why did the male girl come with them, by the way? It's just because she was there.
It was three or four chapters ago. It was right before this arc started. They told us why, and I don't remember why. I also don't remember her name. They sent her along to like document what he was doing, maybe something like that. I don't remember. She was assigned to go with him, and she was like, "No, I don't want to. I'm like a male person. Like, don't make me go."
I think it might have just been because of proximity, because she was just there.
Yeah, potentially.
That's so funny.
Cool. Anything else about Ichi the Witch, chapter 10?
Nope.
Cool. A couple of pieces of news I wanted to go over that came up this past week. We got an announcement, I think today or yesterday, that You and I Are Polar Opposites is going to be ending in 2 weeks with chapter 65. So that's a good one that I've read a little bit of, that I was planning on reading, that maybe now I will get through, so we can talk about that in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've only read a few chapters of it, but it was cute.
Yeah, it's definitely a good one. Let's see. Another thing we got is We Will Never Learn. Author Taishi Tsutsui is returning to Weekly Shonen Jump with a new mystery manga titled Sid Craft's Final Deduction. I am curious about a mystery manga, because those, I think, are exceptionally hard to write.
It's kind of funny. This is like another harem writer going into the mystery genre.
Yeah.
Just like Negi with
Negi Haruba, yeah.
With Quince and Ranger Reject.
Quince and Ranger, yeah. And I was going to say, like, there's the last time that Weekly Shonen Jump tried a mystery series was, Smartphone, that Smartphone series that was bad.
Yeah. I don't even know what I'd call it. So that's like a Death Note type series more than even a mystery series, I feel.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it is a little different, but yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen a true like mystery series in Weekly Shonen Jump in the past couple of years. Like, not real. Like, I think mysteries are incredibly difficult to write. Like, I think Ranger Reject is full of a lot of good mysteries and a lot of good questions. There are lots of series that are not mystery series with good mysteries in them, but to say a series is a mystery series means that, like, you've got to, I feel like you have to be really smart to write a good mystery series.
I also think it's, like, incredibly hard to do mystery week to week, because, like,
yeah,
like, there are some rules in writing mystery, right? It's, like, it has to be, like, the perpetrator has to be one of the first characters you meet, and it has to have a logical flow to where the outcome of the mystery is intelligent but obvious to the audience, so the audience can put it together themselves and feel smart about it. But it's also not so obvious that the audience is like, okay, well, obviously it's the butler, you know?
Yeah, which I
and week to week, there's so much discussion that I think, like, people can have the time to put it together and stuff, like an Agatha Christie book.
Yeah.
You can read it in one go, right?
Yeah, well, okay, and I guess the family thing was a mystery from Taizen 5. Do you remember what
that
was?
Oh, yeah. Ichinose Family.
Yeah, Ichinose Family. Yeah, but that was bad. Like, I would say it started pretty good, right? Like, I would say the first couple chapters of that were pretty decent. And there was a mystery, and then there were too many mysteries, and then it fell off a cliff. So I guess my big opinion on this is I actually don't think Weekly Shonen Jump is a place that should be publishing a mystery series. Like, I don't. Kid, because it's like, it's either going to be a kid mystery type thing, right? Like, where it's not, that's not super engaging. It has to be so easy that like a 12-year-old can figure it out. I don't know, because I think,
you know what, we could be off base. Detective Conan has like 1300 chapters, so maybe this pops off as a kid mystery.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Like, I'm not sure how it's going to work. Or maybe, you know, maybe it says it's a mystery series and it won't be. Maybe it'll be a week-to-week mystery thing like that, you know, like, or like volume-to-volume mystery. I was going to say that probably the best mystery writer is, I mean, now Kurosawa. I don't know if he's actually touted like that, but like Monster is a mystery, and Billy Bat is a mystery, and 20th Century Boys is a mystery at its core. Those are all like mystery dramas. And so it's hard to beat yeah, who I consider one of the greatest like authors of all time. Like, not even just manga authors. Like, I think Naoki Urasawa is like one of the greatest authors of all time. So
I don't know if you know this, but I'm like a huge mystery buff in that I have consumed like a billion mystery movies. And my worry here is that not like 80 to 90% of them are pretty bad.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's a difficult thing to write a good mystery, because it's like you said, it has to be smart enough to surprise most people or keep you in suspense and surprise you later on and not right at the start. But it also has to be smartly written enough that you could have figured it out if it's a real mystery. Right.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, I just I don't know how it works out, but Detective Conan is kind of a precedent that it can. So
have you consumed much of Detective Conan?
I read like 200 chapters.
Okay.
Like a decade ago.
Is it an actual mystery series where
it is?
Okay. It's like, what I understand, it's very kind of like Sherlock Holmes mystery, right? Where?
Yes. I don't know if you're like familiar with Holmes. It's like Poirot or Holmes, where it's like a case by case mystery.
Yeah, because I've read the entirety of Sherlock Holmes. Like, I've read everything that that author wrote, whose name I'm forgetting. But then I really like the Sherlock Holmes mysteries. They're
and that's
really
why
interesting.
That's why he's named Detective Conan, is because he named himself
Arthur Conan Doyle. Yeah, yeah.
Conan Doyle. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, I was like, the name. Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. That's cool. So yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe it'll be good. I hope it's good. I never want to hope for failure.
Yeah, well, and I love mysteries, so I hope it's good too.
Yeah. Cool. Speaking of mysteries, and we mentioned this one, Ranger Reject / Go-Go Loser Ranger got a season 2 announcement, which is good and big, and hope more people watch that, because unfortunately the worst part of the entire series was the second half of season 1. And we got through that, and basically it's all bangers from here on out. So hopefully people come back and watch season 2 Ranger and talk about how good it is, and people pick it back up, because yeah, season 2 starts with joining Green Battalion, going to the sort of high school alt world thing, which is really a fucking great arc and really cool. So
I think that's the arc that hooked everyone, or like was the selling point on Ranger Reject, where everyone's like, okay, I'm invested now.
Well, you know? I remember like, yeah, because we were talking about it, you know, it would publish, we talk about it when a chapter came out before we did the podcast. And I remember we really liked the start, and then parking garage arc, we were kind of like,
yeah,
like every 2 or 3 weeks, we're like, that was a really good chapter. And the next week, we'd be like, that wasn't a very good chapter. And we got to the sort of Green Ranger school arc thing, and like every week was like, holy shit, these are bangers, like this is so awesome now. And it's basically been awesome since then. So
and I think it's because like, we, instead of introducing 8 characters at once, we have a focus cast of 4 people,
and we cut out a lot of the outside cast and brought them into a world where it's just them and they're just dealing with it. And like Green Ranger kind of just goes away for a lot of the arc, and it's only Dee and what's her name,
Angel and Hisui.
Yeah. So,
and they're, I think Green Battalion honestly saved the series, and they're so likable, you know?
Yeah. I don't dislike Sakurama and, Kiri, what's her name? Sakura Kiri? The Sakurama. Blonde girl from the very start. Sakurama, the 3 people, it's D, Sakurama, and the girl who meet up.
Let's take the dragon girl. Yeah.
Minor spoilers, but yeah. Those 3, like, those 3 were good, but they also got broken up pretty soon, and they didn't like getting D a new group of people to form around him was a good idea. So
yeah, and like even in the parking garage wars, like D was still a phenomenal protagonist, but he was like the only thing I found interesting to read about.
Yeah,
until Blue Ranger showed up. But
When Blue Ranger shows up in the park garage arc, I think that part's really good, but that's in the end. It's weird though, because you have to read that arc because all of those characters come back slowly and are important as they go on, but it was just not a great way to introduce them all. But
we just got like overstimulated with 9 different characters that weren't developed. They all became likable later on.
Yeah, they all get developed later, but
yeah.
Cool. Let's see. Oh yes, Oshinoko's last chapter is next week. That will probably be on our next podcast. We'll be talking about how that ended. Not looking great so far, but maybe we can save it with that last chapter.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week.
We'll probably have a pretty long conversation about that whole series.
So
last thing on the news here, we have The Summer Hikaru Died will be ending with volume 10, which I think is still pretty far away. We're on volume 6 was the last published one, which means we've probably reading through volume 7, so probably 3 or 4 more months. I need to catch back up with that series. That I really like that series. I think it's very good. I think it won a lot of awards. I think it deserved. But I need to catch back up with it. So
that's the gay body snatching.
Yeah. Series. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
got it.
Basically. Yeah. The yes. Yes.
Yeah. The kid died and the alien possessed
him. Kid dies in the summer. The weird eldritch thing possesses him and his friend has to keep him secret. Have you not read it at all? I thought you read a little bit.
No, I read like, I think 2 chapters.
Okay. Okay.
When we saw
Learn and Work. Yeah. I read like maybe 15 or 20 chapters like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. So yeah, I need to catch back up with it. It's good though. I like it.
Nice.
Cool. That's it for news. Let's talk about one more thing. I watched Arcane Season 2, Act 1. Yesterday. It's good still.
What is that into? Act 1 is the first 3 episodes?
First 3 episodes. They'll do 3 episodes a week for 3 weeks, and it's 9. Same way they did the season 1. Did you watch season 1 of Arcane?
I think I watched 1 episode of it.
Oh, dude, it's so good.
Would you say it's good even if I don't care about League of Legends?
Yes, absolutely it is. Yes.
Okay, got it.
It introduces a great world. It's great with characters. It is stylized. Yeah,
is my favorite League of Legends champion in there?
Who's your favorite League of Legends champion?
Shyvana.
No.
Zed. Riven.
No.
Okay.
This is Zaun and Piltover, so it's Vi, Caitlyn, Jinx, Singed, Warwick.
Singed is
Jace,
in this.
Victor. Yeah, Singed plays a pretty big part. Although he doesn't have a giant canister on his back yet.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a really good show. Like,
I should check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the thing to really do is like watch the first 3 episodes. And if you don't like those first 3 episodes, then it's okay to quit it. But boy, like I was fucking sold after the first 3 episodes. I think it's great.
The animation was like very beautiful.
The animation in this is like they are absolutely taking to heart the idea that like every frame a painting, like if you pause this show at any moment, it is staged and lit and presented like it could be a painting on your wall. Like it's that good.
Awesome. I got to check it out. When they say it acts, right? Like, is it like, does it mean like these, it's like a chapter in a book where it's like a little bit self-contained, like a mini story within those 3 episodes?
So the first 3 episodes of season 1 are kind of like that. And then the other 6 episodes are more of a continuous story. Season 2 seems like it's going to be more of a continuous story. There's like,
okay,
it isn't like that's over, like nothing ended in the 3 episodes I watched. A lot of stuff was set up. It was very much kind of like a setup arc. But
and Vi's the main character.
Vi and Jinx and Jace and Victor are kind of the 4 main characters. Caitlyn is big in season 2, so she's a main character there, but yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but it's great. Like, yeah, I definitely watch those first 3 episodes of season 1 and see if you like it, so.
Yeah, I definitely should. So this is on Netflix, only 3 episodes. Is the rest coming out on, like, November 9th, or wait.
Today's Act 2 will be 16th, whatever Saturday or Friday night is. Yeah, it comes out like Friday at 2 a.m. for us. Because
this is like one of the first shows I've seen Netflix kind of stagger.
Yes, and it does wonders, and I hope that they do more of it. They do publish weekly anime stuff sometimes, but this is like a Netflix official show where they did that. I think it's great.
You know, I agree with you. It's kind of like a weird thing that it's like it's a worse consumer experience if you think about it, but it's better on a meta reason because you can discuss each
I don't
episode.
Even yeah I think I mean I don't even necessarily think it's worse. Like we for fucking 60 years we dealt with one episode of a show a week and we were fine with it. And like I get the binge, like I want to binge things and that's cool, but also like it's cool that I got to watch 3 episodes and then I get time to think about it and talk about it and then do 3 episodes next week and 3 episodes the week after that. Like I think that this is a good middle ground where instead of like they have 9 episodes, they could have done 1 episode a week for 9 weeks, but instead they grouped them together and did 3 at a time.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's great. Like, I think it's a better way to do it is like, if you're going to do a TV show, like I think definitely if you're premiering a TV show on a streaming network or a streaming platform, that's going to be not dropped all at the same time, drop a set of episodes, drop two or three or four at the same time. I was disappointed that Dandadan didn't do that. We saw the first three episodes in theaters. I wish they had just dropped those first three episodes for everybody at the same time and then done one episode a week after that. Like, I think
for
that
the buzz. Yeah.
Yeah.
As much as I hate AMC, they're right in how profitable a TV show is. Like, if you cut the season in half and then get it like a few months for people to buzz up the hype.
Yeah, for sure.
I hate that, by the way. I hate what they that practice. Yeah. But
I still have not watched, what is it, Invincible season 2, because they did that. Like, broke it up.
Yeah.
I'll watch it when it's all out.
Cool. I guess it's like, it depends on how good your show is, because Breaking Bad,
that's also true.
You remember Hank shitting? Like,
yeah, I remember that.
It's so funny, because from that episode, it's like millions of viewers tuned into that episode, the episode right after that, 5 months later.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, it was like 6 million for the episode before and like 11 for
Return. Which, again, yeah. I think in the streaming platform age, is the benefit of like giving your show a week or 2 weeks between releases is like, you release a show, you let people advertise for you and talk about it, and all the reviews come out on the review sites, and then people go, oh shit, that came out, I'll watch that. And then the next season, the next block comes out and everyone will watch it live, right? Or watch it sooner. So, or you'll get more subscribers. So I think it's smart. Yeah, Tim, tell me about Wild Frost. Is this another roguelike you're playing?
It is.
Okay.
It's a roguelike deck building game akin to Slay the Spire. It's actually very similar.
Okay.
I've played a lot of deck builders before. And of course, nothing is better than Slay the Spire. It's kind of an impossible feat that even they're releasing a Slay the Spire 2, and I'm not sure how they can make it as good as Slay the Spire. It's that dominant of a game. But anyway, I digress. Wild Frost is very fun. And as a Spire-like, I think it is... It's close. It's close in a lot of ways. It's a bunch of different... Every run is a little bit different. And I think it's just a phenomenally made game. With that said, I think it's like... You'll get like 20 hours of it and you'll be pretty much done with it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good number of hours to get out of a game. So
I think so too, because I was engaged all 20.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. For sure. Cool.
Yeah, that's about it.
Anything else? All right. Let's get out of here. Hey, thank you everyone for listening or watching. Don't forget to leave us feedback, comments, upvote, like, subscribe, thumbs up, ring the bell, all that jazz. Check out Twitter and Patreon, linked in the description. And thank you for being with us yet again this week.
See you later.
And don't forget to read more manga.